Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. This is it. We are in the N for networking section. We used to be in the L for library section, but now we are in N, and you can follow along if you want. I just go to the package list on the internet, the repository package list for Slackware. I use the one at Oregon State University. I don't remember why. There's no reason. It's just the one that I landed on, and I've bookmarked it and used it ever since I can remember. And it's got all the packages for all the different Slackwares. I've got a link to it on my on the website as well, in the show notes. That's what I was trying to say. And so I'm saying this because the first package that we're going to cover is bizarrely not starting with an A. It just happens to be a capital letter. And the way that this, I guess the Apache probably web server that is listing the directory happens to sort things capital letters first. So the first two packages are start with M and then N, and then we're in the A, the packages starting with the letter A, obviously still all within the N for networking section of Slackware. Okay, so let's start with modem manager. Modem manager, there's a term I haven't heard in a long time. Actually, I have heard the term modem manager in a while because I deactivated it on my system, but you don't really think about modems much anymore, probably. I mean, a lot of us don't. Most of us, I would say, probably just connect to a router, and then the internet happens. It's just magic. Things get routed to us, and that's the only that's the network connection that we have available to us, and that's perfectly fine. But apparently, and this is kind of news to me, to be honest, I hadn't really thought about this all that much, but apparently there are still modems out there, and really they're, you know, typically like cell phone modems. They're like cellular modems. So modem manager is the component of your system that can recognize those devices and help you connect to that network. So network manager alone, which actually I guess I shouldn't be mentioning that because that's the next one in the list, but if you happen to know what network manager is, then you'll find that that alone wouldn't necessarily recognize your, I'm trying to find a post-market OS device in modem mode or whatever, but modem manager would detect that. So modem manager says of itself, modem manager is a system daemon which controls WWAN, 2G, 3G, 4G, and 5G devices and connections. Alongside network manager, modem manager is the default mobile broadband management system in most standard GNU Linux distributions, and then they list a bunch, and is also available in custom systems built with BuildRoot or Yocto or PTX Dist. It says that modem manager may also be used in routers running OpenWRT, and it can also manage voice and data in mobile phones running post-market OS. Oh, okay, so that wasn't even a modem device, I guess. But anyway, it uses libqmi, libmbim, and libqrtr-glib. They're developed within modem manager, but they are, you know, separate libraries. So I don't know, I would imagine we're going to encounter them again later in this list, but there they are. So MBIM, for instance, is the mobile, no, yeah, is it? Yeah, mobile broadband something or another. Mobile broadband, it stands for something, MBIM protocol. It stands for the, mobile broadband interface model, MBIM. It is a protocol and service extension implemented by Microsoft to support features of new technologies like 5G. So this is all from modemmanager.org, and that's the website of this open source project. And it's got a lot of documentation. It tells you all about all the different protocols and all the different kinds of devices that you might see, that you might be able to interface with in order to get yourself a network connection directly to your little dedicated modem. Now, it's important to note that this is not like tethering mode for your cell phone. Your mobile phone may have a tethering option. It might not. Some carriers see the opportunity to charge you extra to do something that's technically not complex on an Android phone, for instance. And so they'll lock that down and won't let you tether. It's an arbitrary, you know, manufactured thing that you cannot do until you pay them extra. So there are providers out there that do that. So you might not have tethering available on your phone, or your phone might think that you have tethering, but then when you turn it on, it doesn't work. So if you've got tethering on your phone, then you can plug your phone into your computer and then connect to that phone as a router. So that's not modem manager's job. It's not invoking modem manager in that case. It's just connecting to that device as a router, essentially. And I'm assuming, you know, I have not looked, but I'm assuming on the phone, basically a DHCP server has been started up and NAT has been configured. And then the things that come into the phone go straight to your computer. And that's how that works, I imagine. It kind of feels like a modem, because I mean, it's a phone that you've plugged into your computer and you're magically on the internet after you connect to it, but it's not. That's not the same thing. A modem, you know, the modem protocol uses like actual modem protocols, lots of different ones, all of the ones that are available to interface with all the latest technologies. I don't have a modem, a cell modem or anything like that. Never seen one as far as I know. I've heard of them vaguely. But yeah, my most recent interaction with modem manager was that I noticed it was sending like an error in the boot log, and I decided in like system log, and I decided to deactivate it for that reason. And it's been fine. It's not been a problem. So if you don't have a modem, you can probably uninstall modem manager without fear. There's also a modem manager -QT, which maybe we'll see that later in this list. Modem, no, doesn't look like it's here. Although there is a mobile broadband provider info that we'll get to eventually. But maybe we've already covered it, modem manager -QT as part of the KDE framework. And presumably it's the interface for this. But once again, I've never had the pleasure of interfacing with like a modern modem. I don't have that available. The closest thing to that, like I say, is just tethering on a cell phone. Like that feels like a modem, but it's not the modem. But I understand that some laptops, like some fancy laptops, just come with a modem, like a cell modem in the laptop. And I guess you probably add a SIM card. I don't know how it works, honestly, but you somehow make that, you know, you register that with someone, so you pay money to be on the internet. So anyway, that's modem manager. I no experience with it. Network manager is next, and network manager is really, really great. It is the interface that you probably use to connect to a network on Linux. One way or the other, you probably use this. Maybe not. I mean, it's possible that you don't use network manager, but then you'd have deactivated, I would think, yourself. You would have turned that, you'd have declined to use that manually. So back when I started Slackware in 12.1 or 2 or 0 or something, that's the version number, 12.0, 12.1, 12.2, something, one of those, there was HAL for hardware abstraction layer, and there was no network manager. The way that you connected to a network, I think there was no network manager. Now I'm doubting myself. Maybe there was a network, the network manager, but I didn't know about it, which, believe me, is possible. But the way that I knew to do networking on this computer was to connect, well, was to configure the if you were plugged into an Ethernet cable, you configured your ifconfig or your eth0.config or something like that. Like you had to configure like a configuration file, if I'm recalling correctly, and you could connect to a network through that configuration file. You do like an if up or something like that, and start up the interface, and then you'd do a DHCP D to grab a DHCP address from the network you've just connected to, and so on. And it worked fine, and I used to use it at work and home, and that worked. Now, for wireless, there was a different thing called WCID, W-I-C-D. There were a couple of other options. There was iwconfig as well, but that, I don't know. I mean, I did use iwconfig initially because I didn't know about WCID either, so I used iwconfig for a long while. And that, again, took a lot of configuration, and then it would depend on what kind of encryption the network that you were connecting to was using, to govern how you configured your iwconfig, because there was WIP encryption or something like that, and then WPA, and so on. So you had to know what you were dealing with and configure it differently depending on what it was. WCID was really nice. It was a Python application using, I think there was a GUI, but there was also a TUI, a terminal user interface or whatever, written in incurses. That kind of, sort of interactive display, and it would scan you. And that's another thing, just to know what was out there, you had to scan for networks, and then you could do like IW list or something like that. And then you'd know the name of the network, and then you could connect to that. It was really difficult to do manually. I mean, not difficult. There were a lot of steps, and you kind of had to, I mean, if you had to do that every time you wanted to connect to a wireless network, it got very, very tedious very quickly. I did it for a long time, quite manually. I think, again, partly because I didn't know about WCID, but also just, for practice. And it was interesting. It was interesting to see, what worked, what didn't work, when it failed. It was all very educational. But I am really, really glad that those days are behind me, because now there's just Network Manager. And Network Manager just manages all of your networking needs in a nice GUI or command interface. So in KDE, if you're running the Plasma desktop, you can just click on the network icon in your little system tray, and probably, as long as you don't have it off, it will probably list all of your wireless connections that are available. If it doesn't, then you may not have a wireless card installed in that computer, or you might just not be around any networks. It'll also list any active wired connections that you have activated, and it will also provide you options. If you go into the settings for that little widget, you go to the connections system settings, you can create VPN connections through an OpenVPN configuration. Now, for that, you need to know, what server you're trying to contact, like what gateway, what VPN gateway you need to contact, what kind of connection type. Are you using password? Are you using pre-shared keys or a certificate? Actually, static key is what it's called, yeah. And then you have to have the certificates probably on your system to authenticate or to verify that the connection that you're connecting to is the one that you think you're connecting to. Do you need your username and your password, or do you want to be prompted for a password every time, and so on? So once you get that going, then in your network manager, you have VPN connections available as well. So, I mean, really, there's just, and if you plug in a device with a built-in little server into like USB, then you can switch over to that connection for whatever reason, if you have something that wants you to connect through a little network. So Network Manager, it's dynamic. It monitors for connections, for potential connections, and it presents it to you in a nice little menu. Now, we've already talked about, I think previously, the NMCLI command, and that is the Network Manager command line interface, CLI, NMCLI. And you can do pretty much all of that stuff through the terminal. There's a little bit more manual stuff because you have to kind of create connections yourself and set those up. But once you do that, then you can reuse the connections. So it is a little bit more manual. The Network Manager, the GUI version, it just shows you what's available all the time, and you can just switch back and forth to whatever network you want. And if it's on a laptop, you go out into the world, you go to a cafe or something, there's a network or a hotel, there's a network there. You open up your network manager. You see the list of Wi-Fi signals. You connect to the one that you want. You enter whatever kind of password they've provided you, and then you're on. It's just so nice. It is really great. You know, in fact, let's go for a coffee break right now. It's a little bit on the early side. Let's do it anyway. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about networking. I mean, that's kind of the appropriate thing here, I think. Let's level set and talk about networking, how it works, what you need to know, and then we'll end the show, and then next time we'll start with the A's of the N section. Okay, coffee. We're back. I'm still drinking this Robert Harris coffee. I was going to say blend, but it's not really a blend. Or maybe it's blend. I don't know. It's Robert Harris. I have another bag of it, but it's a different bag. So probably by the next episode, I'll probably be onto that bag. So we'll see how that is. It's good. It's good. It's fine. It's good stuff. I mean, you know, like it's a nice, reliable coffee, as I've said before. It's not bad. It's not great. It's just a good, reliable coffee. If you come to New Zealand for a visit and you're just picking up like a bag of coffee to take back to the hotel room so you have coffee, then, I mean, your hotel might have coffee, but if not, then, you know, you could do worse than Robert Harris. You could just, that would be one that you could grab, and it would be like getting Folgers in the U.S. Well, actually, it would be a lot better than Folgers. You'll think, wow, this is their baseline? Why don't I move to New Zealand? And yeah, why don't you? Okay, so we should talk about networking, because I realized sort of midway through networking manager that maybe we should break some of the elements down that the N software series of Slackware has to deal with. So I'm going to cover the real basics here from just configuring a network, but also what a network is. So in computing, a network is a collection of two or more computers that can communicate. Now, there's a little bit of a caveat there, because your computer can also communicate with itself. So you could argue, and correctly, I guess, that you could use networking protocols to communicate with your own computer. But, and that's true. So I guess I shouldn't even say arguably. It's just typically when we're talking about networking, ultimately the goal is usually to communicate with some other device. There might be the odd application out there that's just like, for whatever reason, I want the user to communicate with me over a network. And you could just set actually, you know what? There's a perfect example of that. Localhost : I bet you know what I'm going to say, 631. There it is. CUPS, the common Unix printer system, whatever that stands for. Yeah, system. That gives you access to its interface over a network. But when you communicate with CUPS, you're not leaving your computer. You're talking to what's called localhost, which you probably have seen in its numerical form as well, 127.0.0.1. All right. Well, anyway, in order for networking to communicate between devices, the machines on your network must be able to find one another. The systems responsible for making that possible are TCP and IP. And I'm going to go over those really briefly, one at a time. So Transmission Control Protocol, that's TCP. That's the communication that transports messages between computers. So they're communicating, your computers are communicating using digital signals literally carried over Ethernet cables or radio waves or microwaves. The specification for that, for how that is done, is the TCP protocol. And you can find out more about the TCP protocol at tools.ietf.org/HTML/RFC 793. That's where you can find literally the transmission control protocol. Like that's the definition for that. Okay, so the other big protocol involved here is the IP protocol, called the Internet Protocol. Computers on a network need to identify themselves and each other with unique something. And the thing that we use are unique numbers, like 10.0.0.0.1. Wait, how many zeros was that? 10.0.0.1. There we go. 192.168.1.1, something like that. Now, these are generally mapped also to host names, such as laptop or desktop or Darkstar. You might have seen that on your Slackware box, or Penguin, or whatever name you give each machine. Now, whether they know each other's name depends on a bunch of other things, but the numbers, at least, are defined by the IP protocol. And you can find more about IP protocol in RFC 791. So again, that's tools.ietf.org/html/RFC791. Actually, when I go to that, it redirects me. So I guess it's actually datatracker.ietf.org/doc/html/RFC791. Whatever. So minimal networking setup here. The simplest possible network that you can do, as I said before, is basically a single node network, which means that it's just you, just your computer. Now, that is just, you can do it really easily. It's all configured. Ping space dash C1, just to limit how many times we're pinging, so that dash C is count. So we're going to ping once, space localhost. Now, as I said, localhost is the name given to the number 127.0.0.1. And the interesting thing about 127.0.0.1 is that every computer out there has that number, but it's a private number. Nothing else can talk to 127.0.0.1 except yourself. So localhost is mapped to 127.0.0.1, and everybody's got that number except nobody's got that number. So if you ping localhost, you'll discover pretty quickly that you get a response back. And if that doesn't, if you do that and you can't tell whether it's successful or not, because it does have a lot of output that maybe doesn't mean a whole lot to you, you could also just ping something completely fake, like ping dash C1 fake computer, and then you get the error that looks like an error. The localhost name is defined locally on your computer. That's why your computer can find the casual name localhost. So if you do a cat on etsy /etc/hosts, you see the first non-commented line is 127.0.0.1 space localhost, meaning your computer knows by looking in that file that when you tell it to go talk to localhost, you mean to talk to 127.0.0.1, which is assigned to your computer in some configuration file somewhere. I don't remember where, sorry. Okay, so that's a single node network, not very exciting. Let's do a two node network. And this is actually interesting because I used to use this a lot, because I had discovered, as many people before me have, that sending files over an Ethernet cable can be faster, or at the time, I haven't tried it lately, but it was faster than sending it over USB. And that kind of surprised me, because I didn't realize it would be that much different. But when you're backing, you know, and for one or two files, not a big deal, not worth the trouble. But if you are backing up, as I was at the time, entire systems, like gigabytes of hard drives, and you're backing, you know, you're making these images and transferring them over to another machine, that can take a while. And so when I was doing like my backup and maintenance routine, I would frequently just connect a computer to the place that I needed to send the disk image to over Ethernet. It's a special Ethernet cable, but you can do it and just send it straight over to the other computer, and it's super fast. So we'll do that together, at least, you know, as a thought exercise, if nothing else. I've got my laptop set up here next to my desktop, so I'm going to actually implement this to make sure that it works as I'm doing it, but listen along, won't you? Okay, so two computer network. Now, what we're going to do here is we're actually going to connect these two computers together by an Ethernet cable. As I said, if you try this, it does have to be a special Ethernet cable called a crossover cable. If you cannot find a crossover cable, you can make your own with an existing Ethernet cable. And you have to cut off one of the tips and rewire it a little bit, but it's that stuff is online all over the place. You can find how to do that. It's not hard. If you've never created an Ethernet cable before, it can be a little bit, you need specialty tools. You need a crimping tool. You need the Ethernet ends, like the heads, the tips, whatever they're called. I don't know what they're called. But you can do it manually, but you can also find crossover cables. They exist. They're out there. They're called crossover cables. And, so I do have one. I mean, I've had one for ages. Like I said, I used to use it all the time at my job. I like to keep, like, the one that I got, like, conveniently was bright orange, and that was, it's super easy to recognize. You know, it's like, oh, there's my crossover cable, so I don't get it confused with just a normal Ethernet cable. But I would advise that if you just get a cable that looks like every other cable, mark it somehow so that you know that it's a crossover cable. It'll come in handy later, trust me. So crossover cable allows you to connect a cable from one computer to another computer, but two of the little cables, or maybe, and I think it's just two cables are swapped. So the signals are going to the correct sort of like terminals, the receptors on the other computer. So in other words, there's no router involved here. That's the important thing to realize. So because there is no router involved, we're going to have to do all the network management manually ourselves. And that's the value of this exercise. Okay, so I've got my crossover cable connecting both of my computers, my desktop to my laptop. They are connected. So right now, because I've got Wi-Fi turned off on my laptop and I don't have Wi-Fi. Oh, I do have Wi-Fi on my desktop, but I've got that turned off. I never have that turned on. So right now, neither of them, if I try to go to a website, let's go to example. Well, no, let's go to google.com because it's never not available, but it's not available now because I'm not on the internet. Okay, so that's good. That's what I wanted. Now I need to... I need to assign an IP address to these guys. So there's a whole block of IP addresses reserved for self-assigned IP addresses. Normally an IP address comes from some other place, some DHCP server somewhere. Usually it's embedded in your router, but you might be running one separately at home. Your work might be running one, whatever. Certainly, probably like in most setups, if you just bought a router, you just got a router from your internet provider, it's probably running a DHCP server on that little box. And all it does is listen for connections. And when something connects to it, it makes an offer. It says, hey, here's an available DHCP address, available IP address. Would you care to have that? And your computer usually accepts. But in this case, there's no such thing happening. There's no DHCP server because it's just a computer plugged into another computer. So when you self-assign an IP address, there's this block of IP addresses reserved for that, and it's 169.254.whatever.whatever. The last two are up to you, but the first two numbers in your IP address, 169.254. So to create a network, you need network interfaces. The Ethernet port is usually designated with the term ETH for Ethernet, and then some number starting at zero. You can see what your system has available to it by doing a sudo IP address. So sudo space IP space address space show. And that'll show you any address, which, you know, you won't have any right now, but it also just shows you what interfaces exist and what's available. And so there's one called the loopback. That's the one that let you talk to 127.0.0.1. And that's why 127.0.0.1 is only available to your computer, because it is on its own special little interface called a loopback device. So if you try to talk to someone else's 127.0.0.1, it doesn't work. Why? Because that number isn't on the other devices. It's on the loopback device. You can't get to someone else's loopback device. You've got your own loopback device. So that's why that works. The second one in my list, anyway, is ETH Zero. Now, on some laptops, I think I've heard, or on some computers, rather, they have a different naming scheme. I haven't really seen it on Slackware, I don't think. Or maybe I have, but not in a while, or not frequently. Like the ones that I mean, certainly my desktop, it's been ETH Zero for as long as I can remember, which doesn't mean anything because I have a horrible memory. But anyway, ETH Zero, there's no IP address here because nothing is offering an IP address to it. It doesn't know what to do, but it does exist. And it recognizes, your computer sees the interface. It recognizes that it exists, and it tells you the MAC address under /ether. It shows you the MAC address, which is like six numbers separated by colons, which is like assigned to the hardware itself. So you know that you have a network device. It's just there's no activity on that. There's nothing telling that network device what to do. What you need to do is add a IP address to that device. And you can do that again with the IP command. So you do sudo IP address add, that's ADD, 169.254.0.1. Just keep it simple. And then space dev space ETH zero, ETH zero, or whatever your Ethernet device is showing up as. It could be, like I say, on some devices, you'll see it, things like EN zero or EN, what was it? EN SP, no, ENP zero, S1, something like that. But on my device anyway, it's ETH zero. So there you go. All right. So now it's one device, one computer, the one that I'm sitting at has an IP address because I told it, hey, this is your IP address. So now I need to go over to my laptop over here and assign it a number. And so that's the same command, sudo space IP space address space add space 169.254.0 dot, let's do a 2. So I got a 1 and a 2, space dev space ETH zero. All right. Now each computer has a means of transport. That's the crossover cable and a way to be found on the network because they each have a unique IP address. That's you've basically created a network, except one problem. Your computer doesn't know you've created a network. This is the sort of stuff that network manager is doing for you behind the scenes. So your computer is not aware that it is a member of a network. All it knows is that it's got a device that has an IP address. It doesn't know to go on that device and look for another IP address. It just knows that it's got a device with an IP address. So normally an external router defines paths that network traffic must take in order to get from point A, or in this case 169.254.0.1, to point B, or in this case 169.254.0.2. It's called a routing table, and it's essentially a map of your network. For a simple network like the one that we've got here, there is no routing table because nothing is imposing a routing table. Nothing is giving me a routing table. And you can, once again, you can see this for yourself a couple of different ways, but let's just use, oh, maybe not. Hold on. Yeah, there we go. Use sudo space route, R-O-U-T-E, and that, in this case, will confirm that there's no route here. You'll see that it has output, but those are just the header columns of a table that doesn't exist. You can also use the IP command if you just want to hang out in IP. You can do sudo IP route. So sudo space IP space route, R-O-U-T-E. And that'll confirm that, yeah, you basically don't have a routing table right now. So you can add a route yourself. And I guess we'll do this with IP again. So sudo space IP space route space add space 169.254.0.0/24. That's networking notation, meaning that there is a subnet available, .0.0, and in that subnet, there are all the addresses, /24, and that exists. So space dev space ETH zero, so we're assigning this route to that device, and then we're doing a space proto space static. The proto static indicates that this is a route created by you. the admin as an intentional override for any dynamic routing that might otherwise occur. You can verify what you just set up by using either sudo route again, in which case you'll see link local .0.0.0.0, the gen mask 255.255.255.0, and so on. Or you can look at the IP space route or sudo IP route with no further input, and it'll dump out what it has. It'll say 169.254.0.0.24 dev eth0 proto static scope link. Okay, so now you know that you're on a network. Your computer understands that you're on a network. You'd want to do this on both computers. You set up a route on both computers, and once you've done that on both computers, you can test this out, because you have your means of transport, that's the cable, you have a means of addressing, that's the IP address that you added, and you have a route, which is the route that you added. So ping-c1 169.254.0.2 from my desktop anyway. There we go. One packet transmitted, one received, 0% lost. And now if I go to my other computer, my laptop, I can do the same thing. ping-c1 169.254.0.1, and there we go. We got a packet across the network. You can view neighbors that you've interacted with recently. Sudo IP neighbor that returns for the computer that I'm at, it says 169.254.0.2 dev eth0 ll adder, and then it shows the MAC address. So that works. We've just created like a very, very basic network. Now, if I were doing this in a classroom environment, I would probably then go and get my hardware switch, hook that between the computers, and start talking about how switching occurs. A switch is a little device. I was going to say a hub, but that's a term that's taken by a hub. So a switch is a little device that allows several Ethernet cables to be attached to it, and then it distributes messages from the computer sending data to the intended destination, which is also connected to the switch. So it's kind of a way station where a bunch of computers can listen, and the switch can distribute the, you know, can route can switch the signals to the correct destination. On modern general purpose networks, a physical switch for physical cables often isn't practical, so people often use just a Wi-Fi access point instead. Same idea though. And you know, again, on modern networks nowadays, you really are dealing a lot with routers. Routers do several, they take care of several things very frequently. I mean, not all the time. A lot of this can be broken out onto dedicated devices, but a common household router or a small business router, you'll find that they're running a DHCP server to assign and track IP addresses to the different devices that join. So that's you going in with sudo IP address and assigning an IP address to a device. You wouldn't do that. You would have the DHCP server realize that something has connected to it. It broadcasts out an offer of an IP address. Some daemon on your system, it used to be DHCPD or DH client, I think, or no, well, I guess DH client must have been the user interface. DHCPD, I guess, must have been the daemon. And now I guess it's Network Manager. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll find out as we go through in. I don't know if Network Manager has its own little DHCP daemon running. I haven't actually looked into that recently. But something on your computer is there ready to accept a DHCP offer from a network that you have intentionally joined. There's also very frequently a DNS server, either embedded in your router for local caches, or it's somewhere out there on the internet that provides, and we've talked about this before, it provides the names associated with the IP addresses. And there's maybe a firewall on your router so that traffic can't get into your network unless the traffic is in response to traffic that you have sent out. And then, of course, the router does all the traffic stuff as well. It directs traffic on the network, making sure that computers can talk to each other or to other devices like printers or to the internet. And then it also performs network address translation, or NAT, which is where it receives the internet signal and then it distributes that internet. So all of that, or at least everything that we did for the two computer network, all of that is taken care of by Network Manager. That's what Network Manager does for you. It listens for that DHCP address. It accepts it when it's received. It sets up the, you know, it configures the devices. It switches from one device to another. Whether, you know, when you decide, oh, I can't be tethered anymore, I need to unplug my Ethernet cable so I can go over there to that other table or that other desk. Well, then it switches over just automatically over to your Wi-Fi. It detects a new Wi-Fi network when you go to a cafe or to a library or back to work or home. All of that stuff gets done by Network Manager. You don't have to do anything except open the menu and switch to it. And frankly, sometimes not even that, because modern Network Manager can auto-join the networks that you trust. So sometimes you don't even have to worry about what network you're on. You're just on the network that you want to be on. Every time I come home from a trip, I'm just on the internet on my laptop. I don't have to think about how to get there. It's got my password cached and it knows my home network. And so it's just an automated thing, thanks to Network Manager. There are other managers out there. Like I say, there was Wicked for a while. It might still be around. I honestly have not checked lately. I did check at one point because I thought maybe I want to use Wicked, not Network Manager. But by then it hadn't been updated to Python 3, I think. It felt like it was maybe going away. It might still be out there. I don't know. Let's look real quick. Let's just, and if it is not, there may well be something that's kind of taken up the mantle. Is that an expression? WICD networking. How to install Wicked on Ubuntu 20.04. No, doesn't look like it is. Yeah, it says here it was removed from Ubuntu repositories due to Python 2 deprecation, and the other like sort of results seem very out of date. So yeah, I don't believe that Wicked is still around. But I mean, there are yet other choices. I mean, I don't know what's available for Linux, strangely, because I'm just really happy with Network Manager. But I know for BSD there is a program called, well, Network Manager. It's called Network MGR. Network MGR, and it is a network manager, again written in Python, but it's been, you know, it's Python 3, GTK 3, and I think it was developed for, I don't know, I was going to say FreeBSD, but it might not be FreeBSD. I'm seeing GhostBSD on their GitHub page. Oh, and FreeBSD and DragonflyBSD. I don't know who, like, quote-unquote owns this. Doesn't really matter. Point is, you could use this on some systems, on BSD anyway. I've never tried to compile it on Linux, but there are other options is what I'm trying to say. But Network Manager, in my experience, has really, really been a useful tool. I mean, it really is an upgrade to sort of cobbling together different solutions for different interfaces. It's really nice to not necessarily have to worry about the VPN connections all the time. It just kind of integrates that. So yeah, it is really quite nice. I highly recommend it. I mean, you're probably already using it, to be honest. But and I don't know what XFCE uses. That'll be interesting to test out once I start looking into the XFCE package set here on Slackware. But hopefully this walkthrough of a manual network configuration has kind of clarified a lot of the components that go into networking and it obviously demonstrates what you don't have to do every day when you just turn on your computer and select a network. But it also, I think, highlights why there would be a networking package in Slackware with pages and pages and pages of components. I mean, you'll see as we go through, there are not every component has anything to do with, like, you know, configuring a network and stuff, but there is some of that, and that's one of the reasons why that exists, because there's a lot that goes into making a computer aware of a network. And we'll learn more about that as we continue through this folder. So thanks for listening. I'll talk to you about more networking packages next time. Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi. My email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep the source open.
Control. We want you to give us everything you've got.